too thin, too artificial. We do not, as a rule, suffer from vertigo, but seeing the disc like this, I begin to comprehend what it means."
Marco nodded. "Quite so. It gives one an uneasy feeling around the ankles, akin to standing on a ledge 100 stories up. A wide ledge, perhaps, but a high one."
"I begin to see what Kin meant when she wrote about the spindle's insistence on having a few thousand miles of planet beneath their feet," said Silver. "It is a mental anchor. The subconscious fears the endless drop towards the bottom of the universe. Could our vague feeling be a shadow of the spindle imperative?"
"It is said that they helped us to evolve, so that is always possible. What do you think, Kin?" "Kin?
What's that?"
"Were you listening?"
"Sorry, I was looking at the scenery. Silver, what's that smudge down there, in what would be Central Europe?"
"I see it. That, I suspect, is where our ship crashed."
They all looked. The smoke was a mere wisp at this distance.
"It looks like a pretty lifeless region," said Silver, in tones of comfort.
"It is now," said Kin bitterly. Invisible, a few miles below, its wings a blur of speed, the Raven focused on the smoke. Behind its eyes, something went click.
The moon rose, full but reddish, underpowered. It illuminated a speeding landscape that was mainly forest. Here and there, patches of land and a few orange lights indicated a settlement. Marco called them to a halt after a long stretch of dark forest roof had passed below.
"Marco, let's land," said Kin wearily. "Not until we have spied out the land.
That bit immediately below us looks unmatched, believe me." Silver landed first, on the reasonable assumption that wild animals would be unlikely to attack her. She switched off her suit and unzipped the helmet, then stood, silently, nostrils dilating. After a minute, she turned, sniffed again.
"It's okay," she said. "I smell wolves, but the scent is old. There are some boars about a mile hubward, and I think there's some beavers in that river about 2 miles towards the rim. No men."
She sniffed again and hesitated.
"There is something else. Can't identify it, though. Odd. Vaguely insectile."
They landed anyway. Kin was dozing in her suit, but concentrated just long enough to stop the belt from crashing her into the turf at the side of the hill. She switched off and allowed herself to sink gently into the scented grass. She awoke when Marco gently put a bowl of soup into her hands. He and Silver had lit a fire. Orange flames shot up and illuminated the forest leaves 30 meters away, and made the camp a circle of comforting firelight. It glittered off the dumbwaiter.
"Who should know better than I that it is unsafe?" said the Kung, seeing the questioning look in her face. "But I'm human enough to say what the hell. Silver has taken first watch. Then it's you. Better get some more sleep."
"Thanks. Look, Marco, about that floating island..."
"We will not mention it. We'll be overland most of the rest of the way to the hub."
"We may find nothing."
"Of course. But what is all life but a journeying towards the centre?"
"I'm more worried about the belt power sources. Can we be sure they'll last out?"
"No, but there is a built-in hysteresis effect. If the power sinks below a certain level, it'll waft you gently to the ground."
"Or the sea," said Kin.
"Or the sea. But I know what is worrying you. It is the fear that your company did all this. But why should they?"
"Because we can."
"I don't understand."
"No. But we could build dragons, we could create people in the vats as easily as we breed up extinct whales. The theory is all there, but we don't do it because of the code. But it is possible. We could have built this disc, but no one would dare do it in home space. Out here, it's a different matter." Marco looked at her sadly.
"Silver convinced me," he said. "If I'm rational, I'm a Kung. I'm glad I'm not human."
Kin finished her soup and lay back. She felt warm and full. Marco had curled up with 4 Norse swords beside him, but she could dimly make out Silver